This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, final hour of our week anyway here on this show. It's Brock and Salk on 710 ESPN Seattle. Wassel in for Brock. I guess Wassel's still got a little day ahead of him.
A little one, yeah.
But we do this at 9 o'clock on Fridays, Tom. We open up the lines for whatever it is that's on people's mind. 206-421-3776. And there's a lot right now. You got Huskies with a really interesting... They have not won in the Rose Bowl, or at least against UCLA, since 1995.
How many times have they played there? Has anybody figured that out?
It's got to be close to half of
that. It was every odd year from 95 to like 09, and then when they went to the Pac-12, they play them down there like once or twice.
Every odd year, so that's like 7 years roughly?
Yeah, right. So maybe nine?
Still probably somewhere between 7 and 9 times.
That's a lot. And yeah. If it were like 5, that'd be one thing. But yeah, that's a lot.
That's a really long time. Pretty crazy. So a pretty good chance to end that weird streak tomorrow. You got the Seahawks and Rams. You got Earl Thomas. You got the NHL team. You got the NBA game tonight. You got football and just everything that's gone on with the NFL so far this
baseball,
year.
Baseball, did you mention that?
And Major League Baseball playoffs and where the Mariners are at, because they look just like these playoff teams. I mean, it's just some bad sequencing for them, Tom, unfortunately. Like, if only things had just, you know, gone a little bit differently, they'd be right there with all these other teams. Just weird year.
I don't think that's true.
No, neither do I. But
we've
apparently
been the masters of bad sequencing.
Right. It's just bad sequencing. 206-421-3776. It is all up to you guys. We'll start with Jeff, who's in Redmond. Good morning, Jeff.
Oh, good morning, guys. It's definitely October out here. A little rain. Leaves are changing. But a couple points, but let me start with the important topic. Smoking rooms.
Okay. Gross.
Oh, man. I was in the Army in the 90s, and the foosball table on the job site was in the smoking room.
Ugh.
Oh, it was awful. Worse than Vegas now. So I think the Jim Irsay box is like, up in Vancouver, there's a spot called New Amsterdam Cafe. And back in the day, you could smoke cannabis in there, but you had to go inside this glass room inside the main room.
Huh.
So you could see everything. It's just total glass walls. Got a little table, people, but if you want to smoke, you can sit outside and eat and roll your stuff. But if you want to go smoke, you got to go in the smoking room.
And then everybody would watch you in there?
Yeah, yeah. Weird. Well, most of the people are in the smoking room. Unless but that, you know, that smoke's much more pleasant.
Right. What happens to the smoke, though? It just gets sucked out?
Yeah, just ventilation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it just becomes part of the, you know,
right, the filter. Jeff, what else is on your mind, smoking aside?
Oh, NHL's awesome. I'm super stoked. And let's go Hawks, man. I think... the George Fant, I mean, it's going to be a tough game, but this team's young and this team's hungry and they're fast. And let's let our defense prove it's top five again.
I appreciate that, Jeff. You know, Tom and I started off the show kind of talking about that. We probably come back to it for a few minutes here, which is just this idea that, you know, there are some that seem to be kind of writing this game off. Like, it's probably a loss and then we'll move on. There's no need to do that. The Seahawks have a can't lose attitude, I think, heading into this one, where they can play loose.
It's not that they're all rookies, but this team was not there for the most part in 2013. I mean, Doug was, Russell was. Was there anybody else? I don't even remember. So
now that Earl's gone, yeah, not really. Bobby.
Right. KJ. But they don't know what they don't know, right? They don't. It's not like they're not coming down from this position of glory. It's, oh, we need to get this back, and we used to be this, and now we're this. They're just there. They just work here. You know, they're just showing up to work and going up against a team that is just like everybody else.
This might be a bit of a stretch, but when you talk about that, and we just had that conversation about rivalries and a few minutes ago, I think there's a bit of a similarity there. And it's just this idea of trying to hang on to something longer than it's really true.
Mm.
Like, some of the problems I think we've had with rivalries, and I'll just use that Red Sox-Yankees one as an example, is that ESPN and Fox, who have the national games, have tried to hang on and make that rivalry seem just as relevant over the last 15 years, when it just hasn't been.
Right.
It just hasn't been. And we as fans sense that they're forcing it down our throat each time they tell us, Red Sox-Yankees, huge game, Sunday night baseball. You're like, really? Is it?
It doesn't feel that way.
It doesn't feel huge. And then when it actually gets big, like it might be right now, like, yeah, you've been telling me that for 10 years.
They've sabotaged
really true. There's some element of the same type of idea that I think has gone on with the Seahawks for the last years. And Brock and I have talked about it, where it's felt a little hollow. You're trying to get excited, not now, not this year, but for the last couple of years, coming off the Super Bowl loss, each year a little bit worse, where you're just like, yeah, I want to get excited for the game. I'm pumped. But I don't want to, like, get excited the same way because the team just isn't quite as good. And we're telling ourselves that they're just as good, and we feel like we want them to have just as good a shot to win every game. But your eyes are and your gut are continuing to show you, yeah, they're not as dominant as they once were. They don't force turnovers the way they did. They don't rush the passer the way they used to. They don't do all the things. They're not dominant physically up front with Marshawn Lynch the way they once were. And what I love about this season is a lot of that pretense is gone. Mm-hmm. I'm not pretending the Seahawks team is anything other than what they are. They're just kind of an interesting, young, fickle team, and we'll see where they go.
I think it's really difficult in the moment. If we're talking about 2015, 2016, 2017, it's really difficult in the moment to admit to yourself, to say, here's where we've arrived, and here's what the situation is. Because oftentimes, you just don't know. You don't know the way things are going to change. Mm. Maybe you take off. Maybe you go on a bad losing streak. So you tend to cling to the past in that sense there.
But all right, 206-421-3776. Grab Adam, who is in Seattle. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning. Since we're playing the Rams on Sunday, I want to get your opinion on their coach, Sean McVay. Before he got to the Rams, Jared Goff was almost considered a bust, and they went from last to first on offense. And McVay is just 32 years old, so he can be around for a long time. And I want to get your opinion on thoughts and all that, and your view on Sean McVay.
Yeah, I'm torn on this one, because clearly everything you've just said, Adam, is true. On the other hand, A, he hasn't won anything yet, and B, he hasn't had to pay anybody yet. Like they haven't had to pay the Piper yet for all of the big contracts that they've signed. Let's see how he deals with adversity. And you know, it says here in I know you didn't actually say it out loud, but McVay's the next Belichick. Maybe he is. But also maybe he's the next Pete Carroll, where the act of having to pay everybody became really challenging for keeping that Seahawks team together long term. Does that make sense?
Exactly. I completely hear you. I don't understand how they keep all those players under the cap. But like you said, once you pay the quarterback, you know, you're kind of straight on the cap. So, yeah, I hear you. He has to do a lot more. Yeah.
You can't deny, though. I mean, Jared Goff looked as bad as I think I've ever seen any quarterback. And I don't know that I heap all that on Jeff Fisher. Maybe a lot of it. But McVay got here. He changed everything. But here's the thing. Goff is making throws. I mean, it's not just Sean McVay whispering in his ear saying, hey, do this. I mean, some of those throws he made against Minnesota last week, those guys were covered in the end zone. He's making incredible throws. I mean, the progression from where he was, I've never really seen anything like it. And the coach has got to get some credit for it. That's the way I'd look at it.
I got to say, Adam is a consistent caller, and it's not that each one of his calls is, like, you know, the most incredible call ever, but he's become one of my – he's got to go back.
Congratulations. You've made the top five.
I'm putting Adam back in the top five callers.
Actually, Tom's going to have to do it because whoever's in that chair is in charge.
I don't know where it is. It's on the floor over there. But we got to grab the top five board, and I'm going to do some erasing, and I'm going to get Adam back into the top five because he's one of my favorites around.
Who's in the lead?
I think right now Kendall's number one, if I'm not mistaken. I know Kendall's up there. Roger Tacoma's there. A couple other guys. You can go grab it if you want. 206-421-3776. In the meantime, we will talk to Bill, who's in Shoreline. Bill, what's going on this morning?
I just wanted to congratulate you guys for finally setting the story right. All week, people have been saying that the Huskies have not won in the Rose Bowl since 1995, period. That's wrong.
Right, because they won the Rose Bowl, right?
2001.
Right. But they haven't beaten UCLA in the Rose Bowl since then.
That wasn't mentioned. I understand that, but it wasn't mentioned.
All right. Well, thank you.
The record has been set straight.
Thank you, Bill, for setting the record straight, and we'll be able to now continue with our show. 206-421-3776. That's the first Husky call we've gotten in open phone lines since we've started doing this.
All year?
We've been doing open phone. How long have we been doing open phone lines on Friday, Kyle? 6 months? I think that's the first Husky call we've gotten. And it's to set the record straight about something we didn't even say.
About an obscure
great point. Let's make some noise.
206.
It's Bill.
Thanks, Bill. Bill in Shoreline. Set the record straight. Make some noise for Bill.
You got Roger and Tacoma, by the way, in the number
one.
Yeah,
Roger's number one. That makes sense. We'll kick Todd and Kirkland off for a little while. We'll get Adam in Seattle.
Yeah, Todd's slumping.
Yeah, Todd has been slumping. I haven't heard from Todd in forever. 206-421-3776. Let's see. Who should we go to next? Another one of my favorite guys, Steve, the Dallas dude, is on the line. Good morning, Steve.
Hey, man. Good morning. Set the record straight. You guys did say UCLA, so he doesn't know what he's talking about. So anyway, what do you think the Seahawks are going to do for the rest of the year? I mean, Their offensive line.
Hold on a second. Steve, hold on a second. This is the first time you've called in 2 weeks.
I've been in Hawaii.
You've been in Hawaii, or you've been in hiding and witness protection ever since Dallas came in here and got a whooping?
No, I wanted to go to the game. Trust me, Hawaii was already set in the plan. trust me.
All right.
I would have rather been at the game.
What happened to your life. Cowboys all up right. here? How come they got beat?
Man, they just gave the ball over. I mean, they gave the ball over. Two interceptions and a fumble. I mean, you can't win. We all know you can't win with those numbers.
Probably true. All right, where are you at with the Seahawks right now? What's your point on the Hawks?
What do you think they're going to finish the season at? Do you think they'll start progressing because their offensive line is coming together? What's your thoughts?
Tom, you were saying 8-8 earlier, right?
I've been saying 8-8 for months, and it still feels that way. They have a lot of deficiencies, and now they have more. They just lost their best player, other than the quarterback. I mean, that has to be accounted for somehow. I'm not saying that Tedrick Thompson can't come up and make an impact. He's his own man. He's his own player. But there's just a lot. There's other good teams now. For a while in the league, it felt like the Seahawks and maybe the 49ers were like the only two good teams in the NFC. There's other good teams out there that have caught up to them. Clearly, the Rams are one of them. It feels like 8-8 to me.
Yeah, it may be. Although the NFC has not gone the way you'd necessarily expect at the beginning of this year. Right, Minnesota was supposed to be one of the best teams in this league. They haven't been. We'll see what Aaron Rodgers, if he's able to stay healthy over the course of this season. They've gotten beat up a little bit. Eagles have looked flawed early, Tom. Like,
but they'll be fine.
They probably will be, but Atlanta's looked not exactly the way you'd expect them to.
The Saints are kind of a Jekyll and Hyde, but they can still light you up.
The Niners were supposed to be at least a middle-of-the-pack team, and now Garoppolo's hurt, and they're probably not close to that. So I don't know. The NFC all of a sudden just finds itself a little bit more wide open than I think we thought it would be. And if 8-8 turns into 9-7, may very well be another wild card year for the Seahawks, which would be crazy. 206-421-3776. Let me grab Travis, who is on line 4. Good morning, Travis. How are you?
Hey, good morning, everybody. How are you?
Hey, man.
I just wanted to talk a little bit about the NHL expansion draft. I'm really, obviously, really excited for Seattle to get a franchise, and to be able to root for somebody other than the Islanders will be a real treat. The expansion draft was so advantageous for Vegas when they did it in 2017. And I was just wondering, has anybody heard anything about whether or not the league intends to sort of recalibrate that to make it maybe not so easy for an expansion draft team to be as successful that early as they voted unanimously? Has there been any change to or an announcement about how that's going to go, or are we a little too far off from that?
So far, Gary Bettman says that the rules will be the exact same. The only thing is that Vegas will be exempt from giving up any players for the actual expansion draft. But yeah, they're gonna get the same rules, which is great. It's much more advantageous than it was previously.
Yeah, I got the feeling that they were pretty happy with the way things went. I don't know why would they change
everything that went on in Vegas is perfect. That's what you want. You want their team in their first year to get really, really close, but not win. Get just close enough to get everybody to really, you know, taste how great hockey can be in the playoffs and get the whole town on the bandwagon. But you don't want them to win in their first year. Then there's nothing left to achieve.
No, it's like Rocky won. He's got to lose so he can come back.
That's exactly right. Like, hopefully they win in like 10 years after kind of aching for it for a little while. And, you know, that'd be great for Vegas.
And then you're making Creed 2, like several years later, all right?
40 years later.
If you have a little time off, you're ready for Creed and Creed 2. 206-421-3776. Jared's in Sumner. Good morning, Jared. Jared, what's up? Jared.
Hey, guys.
There you are.
Hey.
How you doing?
We're good.
Well, you know.
Hey, first-time caller for you guys. I just wanted to talk to you about your ideas on getting Russell Wilson going with run-pass options early on to keep that defense honest. Last week, he had a first-quarter run to the outside for a decent game. And I think it just keeps the defense a little bit more honest that we would be able to. I would like to see a little bit more of that scattered throughout the game early on. And I wanted to get your guys' feelings on it, how you felt about it.
Why do you think that hasn't happened? I think that they're just so focused.
You mean Russell holding the ball and running? Or the actual RPO thing? Which are we talking about?
The actual run pass.
Actually holding on to the ball.
That's kind of what I thought you meant. Russell holding it on the read option is, I think, what you mean, right? Okay. It has been strange. There's a couple different explanations. Like, is it because of this hamstring? He's been on the report for the last couple of weeks because of a hamstring injury. Has that kept him from keeping it a little bit? Maybe. Is Russell just trying to establish the running game and saying, look, you know, I only want to do this at the end to try to, you know, set it up, make a big play later? It does seem like he's had some opportunities to run. What I like about when he runs early is that I think it makes the end think. And now all of a sudden it helps in pass protection. It helps with their running game. I am a little surprised that he hasn't kept it more early in games.
Yeah, he's one more guy that the defense has to account for. The last time I can really remember him just taking off is at the end of the Bear game when the Bears kind of took the foot off
right.
the pedal.
He did once at the end of the game just this past week against Arizona. Yeah, in the fourth quarter, late third or early fourth quarter, he had a big run for 10 or 12 yards where he took off to the right and kept it on a read option, and then he had one more run after that. So it seemed like he knew once the game got close, like, okay, now it's time for me to actually pull this and kind of do it myself. But you would think it would be an opportunity early in the game to just slow those guys down on the other side and make them think.
Yeah, it has been for years. I was saying that a couple of weeks ago. I thought that a lot of this was going to come down to Russell and what he can do with his legs. We'll see what happens with the injury.
206-421-3776. We'll grab Scott, who's in Everson. Open lines on whatever's on your mind this morning. Scott, what is on your mind?
Hey, good morning to you guys.
Morning. To you.
Hey, glad to hear you this morning. Thank God it's Friday. Hey, I was kind of curious. Got a couple things here. What is up with that Booger McFarland in that chair on the sidelines?
The Booger Mobile?
How did he get that gig?
I like Booger. I think he does a good job over on the side. I think he's so far been the best part of Monday Night Football. I mean, Witten doesn't say anything, so you got to have somebody else over there who talks, and I think Booger's done a good job.
Witten needs to find another suit.
Okay.
I think every once in a while, if you're a network, you need to take a chance on something. I don't know whose idea that was, if it was Booger's, if it was somebody else's, but it works. If they had Joe Tessitore up in the booth, and just Booger down there.
And just got rid of Witten entirely?
I think it would work.
I agree with you. Witten's the thing that sort of makes that broadcast awkward.
Well, Joe Tessa, he's a little overly enthusiastic. He gets too excited
he's
over
very
nothing.
Very intense.
Yeah.
Joe's a really intense guy.
Very.
Have you ever been on the other end of a phone call of his here? He's super intense.
No, but when we went down to Shelton a couple years ago to see the boxing.
Oh, yeah.
He was there. He was there with Teddy Atlas.
Right.
Okay, who by comparison, I mean, he was screaming at the corner man. He was screaming at him because he was using.
Joe Tess was?
Yes.
Why?
Because one of the fighters was using the bloody shorts that the guy in the previous fight had been knocked out in.
That's disgusting.
He was screaming
what?
At him.
What? Why was that happening?
I don't know.
That seems disgusting.
And we're talking about, you know, the lowest of the low.
I know, but you still have to use somebody else's bloody shorts?
This guy got knocked out, blood all over his white shorts, and then the next fighter came out.
To wear them?
And he was wearing them.
That's so funny.
I don't know.
Joe's just screaming.
He was going crazy.
He went from there to the Monday Night Football booth in just a couple of years. It's a meteoric rise. 206-421-3776. Our buddy Brad is in Ann Arbor. What's going on, Brad? You are listening, of course, on the 710 Sports app, driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. How are you guys?
Great.
I'm calling about hockey today. I grew up a Red Wings fan, went to the games my whole life. I've used Steve Yzerman as kind of like my personal captain, one of my favorite athletes of all time. If you guys can snag him in some sort of front office capacity.
Well, he just quit, right? Brad, didn't he just leave Tampa Bay? I mean, Yzerman's a genius, right?
That's right. He is. He's a genius, and I think he's there for the taking, maybe. That would be incredible.
Well, and he and Lywicki have that relationship. So, you know, certainly when we saw that news a couple weeks ago, if you got a chance to make Steve Yzerman the first GM of this team, that would be awesome news if they could pull that off.
Hey, do they talk a lot of hockey on the radio in Detroit?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Red Wings are the king in Detroit, for sure. They're the best. So, but what I really wanted, to inform your listeners here, I mean, you guys haven't gotten to see a lot of NHL, certainly not live, and you've heard it before. This is a sport that you really need to see live. The difference between it live and on TV is greater than any other sport. The speed of the game is so great that the play is just instinctual, right? Like, guys don't have a lot of time to think. It's just bang, bang plays. And so when you watch the game, and here's my pro tip, I would say, for you guys. I've been watching and playing this game my whole life. Don't watch the puck. When you're first learning how to watch hockey, just watch the two defensemen. Watch how they play. There's one guy who's always trying to take the puck, one guy who's always trying to watch out for the pass across the middle. If you just keep your eyes on one of the two pairs of defensemen, and watch how they watch those back those backward skating crossover moves. Try to get on the ice. Try to do that. Try to do a crossover backwards. You can see how skilled these guys are. You can just watch that for maybe 5 minutes while they're on their shift, and you can really get a good feeling for the game, and hopefully learn to love it like I do.
Brad, I'm with you on a lot of this stuff, and I'm a lifelong hockey fan. The only thing that I kind of object to, because you're right about all that, except for one thing. This idea that hockey has this giant delta between watching it live and watching it on TV, I think every time we as hockey fans say that, we make it sound like it's not good on TV. And I just disagree. I think hockey's great on TV. I don't think you need to see it live in order to like it. I think hockey is great live and maybe might be the best live sport. But that should not take away from the TV product. I think it's a great TV product.
I think if you only watch it on TV, you're robbing yourself of something. It is great on TV. I'm not gonna say it's not great on TV, but there is a big delta. When you are there live and you can hear those players hit those boards, you can hear those edges of the skates cutting into the ice when they stop and see the spray.
Yep.
It's unlike anything else in the sport. You can be right up against the board. You can't be on the sidelines on football. You can be right up against that glass at a hockey game, and that forward can get slammed into the boards, you know, a foot away from you. And there's nothing else like that in sports.
I appreciate it. Thanks for the phone call, Brad. I'm pretty psyched.
There's actually a book called Take Your Eye Off the Puck. That's pretty good. I've talked about it before. If you just want to get into hockey, it's a really fun read because it's written by a former hockey player, but he has a great sense of humor. So
where do you get all this time to read books?
I don't know.
Read a lot of books. You're always talking about one book or another. Like, you work so early in the morning.
Well, she's in a hockey book club, Tom.
Yeah. With her mom.
Oprah's hockey book club.
So far, we have two members, but, you know, we're growing.
Oh, okay.
We're prideful and passionate.
They're soliciting other members if anybody wants to join.
Lydia!
Yeah, Lydia!
No,
wow!
No. See, like, the dead silence is, like, because I'm
Water! Make some noise!
All right, 206-421-3776. The phone line's still open. Some really good callers still on hold with one line open. Want to get back to them. We got some more running back conversation, according to your calls. We got some more hockey. There's a lot still to go. It's coming up here on Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event. Let's get ready to rumble!
This is Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Jock Jams here on Brock and Salk today. Tom Wassel is in. NBA action at Key Arena tonight.
Da-na-na.
You can't be unhappy when you hear this song, right? It's just one of those songs that makes you smile no matter what. Michael Buffer at the beginning doing his thing. Have you ever heard him on Howard Stern?
No.
Michael Buffer, very entertaining guest on Howard Stern.
I bet he would.
Howard used to make him do the thing where he'd say, "Let's get ready to get ready." And he'd scream it. It's just one of my favorite radio bits ever.
Is Michael Buffer actually part of that song?
I think so.
Or is it just smashed together for Jock Jams?
I don't know. Don't worry.
I think actually on Jock Jams, it's listed as a separate listing.
But the track runs right into it.
Yes. Mm. Okay. Yeah.
I like when that happens, when you get two different tracks. The problem with that later is you press random on like some Spotify program or something.
And that comes
up. But these two things are supposed to be together. You can't separate them on this. All right. The phone lines are open as they are Fridays in the 9 o'clock hour, 206-421-3776. And some really interesting calls here, Tom, over the next few minutes before we do a little answer to the question jerk to finish off the week. Let's grab Austin, who's in Lacey. Good morning, Austin. What's on your mind?
Good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call. So basically what I'm asking is, you know, Mike Davis proved himself last year, I think, and did a really great job decently with what he had with that offensive line. And then he proved it once again last week against the Arizona Cardinals, who have, you know, their defensive line's no joke. So my thought process is, you know, what do you do about that situation with Chris Carson and Mike Davis? And then a little bit tip on the side, what do you do with C.J. Prosise?
Do you make him a
wide receiver or do you cut him?
What do you want to do?
You know, I think you try making C.J. Prosise a wide receiver, and if that doesn't work, get rid of him because he gets injured every 5 seconds.
All right, and what about the rest of your running backs?
I think Mike Davis, you know, I think you do a 2-for-2 combo and make Rashad Penny more of a special teams player for the year, kind of give him a year break.
That's hard to imagine, man. It's not that I disagree with all that. I think there's a little recency bias with Mike Davis, as we've talked about. He had a good game just recently. But don't you think you've got to develop Penny to find out who he's going to be after you spent a first-round pick on him?
Develop is the word.
But
he's not ready.
But you're not developing him by sticking him on special teams.
Watched him play, though, he's not really doing much.
Watched him rush seven times for 49 yards last week. As good as Carson, as good as Mike Davis was last week with 100 yards, Rashad Penny had a higher yard per carry average.
But Rashad Penny also didn't have to carry the rock every single time.
You know what, though? He hasn't had to do that yet. I'm curious, with a productive offensive line, if he did have to carry it the whole game, how would he be? He might not fail. He really might not. You know what? I got to say this. There's something that's unsettling about having Mike Davis and a seventh rounder in Chris Carson as your two lead backs. There's just something that doesn't feel certain about that. It doesn't feel permanent. It still feels like a placeholder. I know that they've said 100 times how much they like Chris Carson. Something just doesn't feel permanent about that.
It's funny. When you watch him run, though, I mean, he certainly runs like a top NFL running back. He takes the ball. He moves quick. He runs hard. He runs downhill. He has a burst of energy. I mean, I think Carson has the possibility of doing that, but I understand what you're saying.
It's a perception thing. Believe me, I'm not saying he doesn't have the ability.
The upside on Penny is still enormous, and yeah. I know he hasn't started off as strong as anybody would like, myself included, and probably himself included. But he's a glider, and if you can get that guy into open space, I mean, you saw what he was able to do in college. You'd love for him to be able to do a lot of that. The Seahawks weren't the only team that thought he was a first or second round pick. So 206-421-3776. Grab Sean, who's in Centralia. Good morning, Sean.
Hey, good morning. Real quick, I love hockey. I'm looking forward to it. But what I really called for was Browning on Saturday. You know, I'm one of those that looked at his records over the last 3-plus years and said, yeah, they're great, but what is he really doing all around as a quarterback? Every throw he made Saturday, except for one, was beautiful. I mean, right on the money, quick release. He made decisions quicker. He was actually seeing his second read. Everything about his game seemed crisp and ahead of everything else. And if he plays that way the rest of the year, I can't see why they won't be undefeated the rest of the year.
If he played that way all year, even just going back a few games, he'd probably be a Heisman winner.
Yeah.
Right?
He was awesome last week.
Yeah. I don't think I would expect that from him every single game. But look, with the size and the speed of this defense, they just don't need him. They don't need him to be what Russell Wilson was last year to the Seahawks. They don't need him to go out there and make 100 plays. They do need him to not make bad decisions, especially when they're going up against teams like Oregon on the road. But this week, I think they can withstand even a couple mistakes.
Yeah, I would hope so, yeah. Down at UCLA. 206-421-3776. How about James in Port Angeles? Hi, James.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Good, buddy.
Hey, man.
Hey, Mike. Hey, everybody. Listen to the show all the time. Just got a question here. Wanted to see what you guys think of Fetty and him basically telegraphing all of the plays. Want to get your take on that, and also your take on our third downs. Is it going to get better? We got a running game, but what is it going to take?
Well, what's your take?
My take is we got to start running the ball on third downs. That would help.
Third and short.
Yep.
That felt like a mistake last time, didn't it? It felt like an oversight. Like
we have the sound of it somewhere, and I don't want to go looking for it, but Pete said it to us on Monday. Like, Pete, what happened on third and short? Oh, that was me. I didn't tell Shoddy not to pass the ball. And look, I got to tell you, that sounds like a problem to me. Why does Pete need to – you have that, Kyle? Play me that sound. This was the interview with Pete on Monday morning.
Well, there's the one call, the third one that we don't make it. You know, I'm kicking myself. I would rather fail running it, you know, than fail throwing it in that situation. I didn't tell Shoddy, and he had a thought that he was going to. It was a good thought. Should have been wide open. Should have been easy. But we didn't execute quite right.
Why do you need it still to tell Schottenheimer?
Mike, he didn't tell Shoddy, dude.
He didn't tell his offensive coordinator that they want to be a running team.
Shouldn't that just be the default in that situation?
Their defensive head coach is the one they rely on to make the offensive calls.
It's so weird.
It's so simple, Mike.
Oh, we should have my offense. What is going on with Schottenheimer? That was probably the most disturbing and concerning thing I've heard from Pete Carroll this year. And I apologize because I went away, I went to Vegas afterwards for this conference and I kind of forgot about it.
I tried to explain this to Jake and Brock Tuesday. So this is a really troubling thing he said.
You and I talked about it on Monday and I plumb forgot about it over the last couple of days. So shame on me. That's the most concerning thing I've heard. Why does Pete feel like he needs to, why does Schottenheimer need to be reminded by Pete Carroll that they might want to run the ball on third and short? Why?
Is that a Pete problem or is it Schottenheimer?
It's a Pete problem because it's a Schottenheimer problem.
Well, has he not been given the autonomy, though, to make that decision himself? Is Pete just interjecting the headset?
What I think it means to me is that he doesn't seem to fully grasp the goal of what they're trying to do around here. If Schottenheimer's default is to keep throwing the ball on third and short, and Pete's saying, I would rather fail on third and short by running it than by throwing it, Then where is that? Why is there a disconnect there?
It doesn't make any sense, but it could just be a mistake, too.
It's not the first time, though, Tom. It's like the 10th time.
On third and short?
Well, maybe the third. I might be exaggerating.
It was twice on Sunday, right?
And there was at least once in the Denver game, and there might have been one in the Chicago game. It's been a handful of times. Enough so that you say, why does this keep happening? You get into third and one, third and two for a team that says they want to be a running team. These are your opportunities to prove it. And Pete shouldn't have to jump on the headset to tell Schottenheimer that.
I agree with that. But the difference is, in this game, the running game was actually working.
Todd and Olympia want to say the same thing. Good morning, Todd.
Ted.
Oh, Ted. Oh, sorry. He's written this down. Ted.
Anyway, hey, to flog a dead horse.
Too late.
Yes, the third. No kidding. The third and one thing. You would think that they would have learned at a Super Bowl a while back.
No,
those kind of things don't really work all that well.
All right.
Furthermore, running on third and 21 or third and 19, and I'm not a real fan of that as well. And finally, do me a favor and tell Dave I said go Cougs.
All right, we'll do all of that.
I'm not a fan of running on third and 19 either, but look, if you're just changing especially if you know you're going to punt anyway, that's a difference.
Why do we have to tell Dave go Cougs? I don't know. All right, I'm done with all this. We got to move on. We got to answer questions via text instead of via phone, Tom. This whole show's about to change.
We've
been listening to your hot takes on the phone. Now we're going to answer your questions via text, as we always do. Any question on any subject, 710, powered by Coors Light. We'll answer the question jerk together next. I'm Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk's Answer the Question Jerk.
Keep asking questions. Come on, I'll answer them. Come on, I'm here. I'm going to answer your questions, dang it.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Well, don't just stand there. Answer the question, jerk!
Todd.
Ted.
I like that he chimes in at the end. Ted.
He's one of us.
That's the best part. Like, I want to be part of this. Ted, yes.
Wants to do a Todd talk. Let's see what we got for you guys. Wassel is in today for Answer the Question Jerk. He's been in all morning, which means that mostly during the breaks, Tom and I have just been talking about Rush. Eddie Trunk, who's a national DJ who talks about metal, put out a list of his 20 favorite Rush songs, which caused Tom and I to throw out our own 20 greatest Rush songs list. How many similar ones do we have? Like 10 or 12, maybe?
It looks like 1, 2, maybe about 7.
Okay.
Yeah, right around there.
I really liked your list. I liked his list. I liked my list.
Well, that's a good band.
That's a good band.
That's the thing.
A lot of good songs.
We could have like a Rush bracket. We could do some bracketology here, seed them.
I would be more interested to list, maybe we could do this after the show, the worst 20 Rush songs.
Oh, geez.
That we just like skip over.
Interesting. A bunch from Hold Your Fire.
Yeah, the whole second side.
The whole second side of Hold Your Fire. Tom and I have this idea that Tom and I have been talking about for a long time of a podcast, Lydia. So we're three members of Rush. We go through a different Rush song in each of the podcast episodes, and we rank the three members of the band in terms of their contributions to that song.
Brilliant. I like it.
Like who slacked off on YYZ.
Right, whereas who made big money.
Right. Getty's going to win them all because he sings, plays bass, and plays
keyboard. You might need to, like, you only get credit for one per song, though. Mm.
There was a great podcast I used to listen to, which was Denzel Washington is the greatest actor of all time. And it was just two comedians that went through every Denzel Washington movie and explained why it was an amazing movie.
They talk about Ricochet?
Of course. Like every single Denzel Washington.
I mean, the behind the back shot is probably what makes Ricochet so good. All right, let's see what we got from you guys today. 710-710 powered by Coors Light. Jerks, you ever have to borrow another man's clothing?
Yeah. At some point.
I had to borrow a pair of socks, actually, last week.
Wow. Why?
I went to Pullman, and as I'm usually do, I packed only wool socks.
Right.
And then it was 72 degrees, and I was way too hot.
I thought you wore wool socks year-round.
I do. But, you know, usually I'm kind of indoors, I'm outdoors. This time I was fully outdoors, direct sun, 70-plus degrees. It was too much, Mike.
You give those socks back washed?
Yeah, I still have them in my possession.
You don't have to wash them. They'll wash them.
Really?
I'll probably just throw them out.
I mean, it's nice to do.
So.
I mean, it's an old pair of socks.
Kyle.
Tom told me... Sorry, Tom. Go ahead. Tom.
Well, I told you
Well, you told me a couple weeks ago that socks should be rotated out like every 2-3 years.
Really?
And I said, I've got pairs of socks that are 10 years old.
Yeah, don't wear those.
Really?
Get rid of them.
Why?
10 years.
Yeah, why?
Because
what?
I'm with Tom, 2-3 years, yep.
Because they're rank.
It was because I was wearing dress socks, and I was like, oh, I actually wore these socks on my wedding day. I got married in these. And Tom's like, you still have those? 3 years. Yeah.
Kyle, you remember when we drove out to Clea Ellen that night? Me, you, Brady, Danny, and Brock?
Yeah, yeah.
And the next day, I had forgotten my deodorant. I had to use Danny's deodorant right after he used it. I'd say that that's worse than borrowing somebody's clothes. Right?
Yeah, I would tend to agree. Used that. I've used the public deodorant, though, in the sports pit.
We have public deodorant. Oh, that's right.
Just in case, because I forgot one day. And I went in there and used
Bunkers
it.
Bunkers used it. Justin, used it. Howdy. Bob won't even look at it.
Yeah. Bob doesn't even like knowing it's there.
Better than being stinky guy.
Right.
We got some cake in there.
Dead. Jared, well, here's a music question for you, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't there two-part songs anymore? Like Boston's Foreplay and Long Time, or Elton John's Funeral for a Friend / Love Lies Bleeding, or Eruption with You Really Got Me. Why doesn't anybody do slashes?
Because we live in a very boring society. I mean, honestly, nobody wants to take any chances.
Mm. I like those. I like when there are songs like that. How about the Guess Who? They have No Sugar Tonight. And what's the other side of that one?
I think you're thinking of Grand Funk.
No, I'm not. It's definitely Guess Who. It's No Sugar Tonight and somebody else. Think of it.
Grand Funk Railroad has I'm Your Captain.
Yeah.
And then it goes into I'm Getting Closer to My Home.
Yes, it does. And Jackson Browne has one.
I don't know.
He's got one that goes into Stay.
I don't know.
Stay a little longer.
That's Jackson Browne.
Well, he does a version of it that's on the back. That's a second part of something.
Mm.
Somebody will know what No Sugar Tonight is called. Jerks, don't you think hockey would be better as a summer sport so everyone would hang out in a cold building in hot weather?
Yeah.
No, it would feel very unnatural. It would just feel weird to play, out.
It would be a little unnatural. It's always strange. If you're back east for a playoff game in May when you get like those really hot days, it just doesn't feel right on a hot day walking into the rain.
One time, well, the great thing about Ballpark Village in St. Louis, they have like an open outdoor area with a huge screen that you can sit on the grass. And so one time I came out of the Cardinals game and then was able to sit on the grass and watch a playoff hockey game, which was just kind of, it was amazing, but it's also, like you said, kind of a weird feeling. Wow, right. It's 90 degrees out and I'm watching a hockey game.
Does it really matter though when it's an indoor sport? I mean, you could do it any time of year.
Yeah, everything matters, Tom.
What? All right, the Guess Who song is No Sugar Tonight, and it's combined with New Mother Nature.
I know that song. I didn't realize they were the same.
Like, it's a new Mother Nature taking over. Mm. Have you even answered a single question yet? Yeah. One.
Next question.
Right there. Don't be jerks about that. Jerks, could you eat at a white tablecloth Italian restaurant without staining the cloth?
With some sauce?
Yeah. Like, could you eat an entire Italian meal without dripping?
No.
No.
The oil always leaks out of the sauce.
It's an oil issue.
It's an oil issue.
And oil's a problem because the oil stains even more than the sauce. Like, you could probably get red sauce on you and get it out with all the new stain removers they have, but oil's the problem.
It separates from everything else in it.
Right.
And just drips all over the tablecloth.
It's terrible.
Off your spoon.
Yeah.
Or your fork.
You pasta with a spoon? You're okay with that?
No. Some people do. Don't they? When you have like linguine.
You do the thing where you like use the spoon together, yeah. And you spin it.
I don't do that, but some people do.
Jackson Brown is the loadout and then stay. That's the combo. I kind of like Jackson Brown. I just discovered him recently.
He's solid.
He's good buddies with the Eagles.
He lived above Glenn Frey, I believe. Like,
yeah, that was in that documentary.
Right.
They were neighbors. Let's see. Jerks. All right. I guess I don't have time for that one.
Ted.
Todd. Oh, Ted. Hope everybody has a great time tonight at Key Arena for the basketball game. I bring your earplugs. Hopefully you don't go deaf while you're there. Hope everyone enjoys seeing if Washington can end the drought against UCLA at the Rose Bowl.
That's going to happen.
Can the Seahawks beat LA here in town with the Rams? We'll find out all these things this weekend, and then we'll see you Monday morning. Brock and I will be in at 7 a.m. Wass will be on later today at noon. Catch you guys then. Until then, hey.
It's in the barn.
See everybody. Number 20.